Do not miss tomorrow's show when I'm taking on a Christian theologian on the divinity of Jesus. I should have my head examined. We'll see how it goes tomorrow. Inside Scoop. Don't miss it. This is Mark Levine. Not enough.
This is the Quality News Network. The White House is defending its response to Congress about the CIA's destruction of videotapes that showed harsh interrogation tactics used on terror suspects. The New York Times reported that four or more White House attorneys took part in talks with the CIA about whether those tapes should be destroyed. White House officials say that the Times story is wrong in terms of their intimation that officials close to the Oval Office tried to keep the story quiet. Late last night, the Senate approved a $555 billion spending measure, providing funding for 14 federal agencies and $70 billion for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Already approved by the House, the bill now goes to the President for signing. On Capitol Hill, Congress passed legislation strengthening the Freedom of Information Act. Penalties have also been enhanced for agencies violating the Act's provisions. In Jacksonville, Florida, city fire officials say three people are missing and feared dead in an explosion that rocked a chemical plant today. The plant manufactures Ecotain, a gasoline additive that reduces tailpipe emissions. According to the lab's website, authorities are investigating the blast site for cause. In Baghdad, U.S. diplomatic and military officials are protesting this week's Turkish air invasion into northern Iraq. Turkey is supposed to ask permission from the U.S. to cross into Iraqi airspace. Authorities say they weren't informed until the airstrikes had already begun. Funerals are being held throughout Iraq today for the 20 people killed in three suicide bombings yesterday. The UN adopted a non-binding measure calling for a global moratorium on the death penalty, a resolution opposed by the U.S., China, and Iran. The Vatican also supported the anti-death penalty vote. The U.S. announced it will begin reducing the nation's stockpile of some 6,000 nuclear weapons, cutting the number of missiles to less than a quarter of its Cold War size. In addition, weapons stored in facilities in California, Washington, and New Mexico will be moved to a plant in South Carolina. Time magazine named Russian President Vladimir Putin as its Man of the Year today. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We have business news coming up next.
You know you can depend on QNN for honest news. Now we want you to know about an honest source of information on one of the country's most desirable vacation destinations, Carmel by the Sea on California's beautiful central coast. That source is the best address in Carmel, carmel.com. Just a few simple clicks and you're visiting a website that mirrors all that Carmel stands for: quality, character, tradition, beauty, the great outdoors by the sea, cultural heritage, and the best shopping. Charming inns, superb dining, world-class art, music, and theater, a cornucopia of delights. So when you're planning your next getaway, go to the best address in Carmel, carmel.com, for tips on everything Carmel. Then put that information to good use by visiting Carmel by the Sea for an unforgettable getaway. Carmel.com.
U.S. home foreclosures rose 68% last month compared with 1 year ago as homeowners failed to keep up with rising mortgage payments. Nearly 202,000 filings were reported for the month of November compared to just over 120,000 for November of 2006. Student lender Sally Mae's stock price sank to a five-year low after its CEO warned investors that a dividend cut may be needed to keep it out of the red. Last week, Sally Mae cut its profit forecast for 2008 by more than 13%. The company, which owns Olive Garden and Red Lobster, reported a 30% drop in quarterly earnings, citing increased costs and decreasing customers. Shares of Darden Restaurants fell 7.5%. America's largest consumer electronics retailer, Best Buy, beat Wall Street expectations by 52% in quarterly profits. The company partially credited strong international sales. Light sweet crude oil is trading at $91.24 a barrel. That's up $1.16. Gold is trading at $805.40 an ounce. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow closed down 25 points at 13,207. The NASDAQ closed up 5 points, and the S&P 500 closed down 2. There's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, welcome, welcome on this, at least around hereabouts, sort of gray 19th day of December. That would mean, what, 12 days left in this sad and sorry waning year? Yeah, that's what that would mean. It's about 7 minutes past the hour. This program is, of course, live, coming to you live from the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful West by God, Virginia, at least the part they haven't blown up yet. And it's always gratifying to have you along. Of course, as you fully well know, if you are a regular to the program, this being Wednesday, this isn't just any old program. No. You know what Wednesday means.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
That's right, brethren and sistren. It is prayer meeting night right here on the horn. Come on down. I'm Brother Bob, Bishop Bob. We promoted me, remember? I'm Bishop Bob Kincaid. Come on down to the altar. Put your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the rays of healing common sense a-flowing through you. Get your magic cracker and go sit down for the service, would you please? A deacon will see you to your seat. Amen and amen. Ha! Praise Jabez. Yeah, it is. It's prayer meeting night here on the horn. And heaven knows, we have an abundance of prayer meeting weirdness. For any of you new to the program, prayer meeting is the night when we take dead aim at the excesses, ignorances, superstitions, and general lack of decent good sense of the right-wing religion industry in America, and occasionally in international parts as well. But it looks like we're pretty much in the U.S. tonight as far as prayer meeting stories are concerned. And, there's a whole basket full. There just is. We have been bountifully blessed, amen and amen, with prayer meeting stories for tonight. We can start in Dallas. Yeah. Or we can start in, let's see, We could start in Montana. Really? A prayer meeting story in Montana? Yes, we could start in Montana. We could, let's stay with the theme. Let's work on Brother Mike Huckabee for a few minutes here. What do you say? Amen. Amen. Yes. Because we've got a report. Yes, we have a report from the fine folks who run the radio network of the American Family Association. We have a report about the White Christmas message for white Christians in Iowa that has begun running, well, not just in Iowa, but New Hampshire and South Carolina as well, begun running. We talked about it last night. And you know, you remember William Donahue of the Catholic League's all burned up about it too. He's afraid that Reverend Mike Huckstraby might be converting a few people away from the true faith. You know, getting people to not believe that eating a cracker turns into human meat in your belly. You know, that kind of stuff. But we have a report. Let's check it out from the American Family Association.
Various mainstream media reporters and liberal pundits have been suggesting that Huckabee was using the Christmas ad to send a subliminal message and try to impose...
Subliminal? Wait a minute. Confound it, there was nothing subliminal about it. Or subliminal. See, I've even forgotten how to properly pronounce the English language now after 7 years of George Bush battered. You know, I actually say misunderestimate now. I do. And I say strategery, too, and I don't mean to. It's just pathetic. It is just pathetic. Heavy-handed? Duh!
Pose his evangelical Christian beliefs on Americans. In the ad, Huckabee is standing in front of a Christmas tree and a bookshelf, which critics have claimed is a white cross floating across the TV screen. Huckabee's Iowa campaign manager Eric Wolson says the governor has unfortunately come to expect such distorted media coverage.
It's indicative of what we've seen with previous spots. They are always trying to read something into a message and always looking for some hidden meaning. When Governor Huckabee had an ad that we call Believe, it's about faith and family and saying that, you know, I'm a Christian leader. Well, they said, you know, immediately all the stories were it was an attack on Governor Romney's faith. Which, of course, it wasn't.
Wilson says day in and day out, the media is trying to create a controversy about Governor Huckabee's faith and record. Jim Brown, Washington.
Okay, Jim. Well, buddy, you know, I'm not the one that won't introduce myself as Reverend whatever. I just introduce myself as Bishop Bob Kincaid. But the media insists on referring to Mike Huckstraby as former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee. No, he's current, present, and future Reverend Mike Huckabee. He just is. You know, don't be ashamed of it. Own up to it, okay? He is currently an ordained Baptist minister who happens to be running for the presidency of the United States, and yes, there is a legitimate fear that he will, in fact, impose his weirdo, right-wing, cultish, Southern Baptist, bizarre beliefs on the entire country if he gets a half a chance. Well, it'll be, oh God, it would be 4 years of the prayer breakfasts and prayer luncheons and prayer brunches and prayer, you know, the prayer Kool-Aid breaks and, oh. GOP presidential candidate. Yeah, and these guys are just more interesting than what we're doing right now. I'm sorry, it's... And just a review, remember, this is Reverend Mike Huckstraby who got his son out of a dog-torturing rap after his son hung up a stray dog by its neck, slit its throat, gutted it, and then stoned it to death. Yeah, that's your Christian presidential wannabe. Mm-hmm, sure. Who also has another son who was known at Wachita Baptist College for having the largest collection of porn on campus. Yeah, him. But it's, you know, the liberal media. Because, you know, the American Family Association said so. This is interesting. GOP presidential contender, the Congressman Ron Paul, Texas, told Fox News. I can't see those two words together without giggling a little bit. Fox and News. he told them that he would not air such an ad and warned, quote, When fascism comes to this country, it will be wrapped in the flag and carrying a cross, unquote. Paul was using a quote that is commonly attributed to Sinclair Lewis. Now, here's the fun part in the American Family Association story. An American author and playwright who died of alcoholism in 1951. Lewis was often critical of capitalism in American society. He died of alcoholism. Really? I've never known anybody to die of alcoholism. I've known that people die of the effects of alcoholism. You know, liver cancer, cirrhosis? I dub these cirrhosis. Now, cirrhosis of the liver? Sure. Irritable bowel syndrome? I don't know. Organic brain syndrome? Hell, we've got a guy occupying the White House right now who has organic brain syndrome. That's obvious enough. Died of alcoholism in 1951. What is that, you know, what has that got to do with the fact that when fascism comes to this country, it will be wrapped in the flag and carrying a cross? You know that to be true, right? Sure you do. So there it is, the liberal media, you know, you know what? The liberal media actually produced the Reverend Mike Huckabee's ad. We did. We made him sit down there in front of that Christmas tree. We made him hire the little Mexican fella who's playing Silent Night on the classical guitar. We did. We even bought the red turtleneck sweater that he's wearing in the video. Liberal media. Us. Yep, we did it. We're also responsible for the floating white cross. Floating white cross? Yeah, it just floats. Ooh-wee-oo. Cue the theremin music, you know. So, you know, that's a place to start. Because, you know, the Reverend Mike Huckabee, I think, is going to provide us a laugh a minute until he might happen to get elected president, and then I don't think there's going to be so much laughing anymore. Marcus Aurelius, he ain't going to be. And if I have to repeat this message every night until I get you all to repeat it with me, I will. We ignore the Reverend Mike Huckabee at our peril on a number of fronts. We ignore him at our peril as compared to, say, if Senator Clinton is the nominee. Because all those good Southern Baptists, and they, I mean, you know, there's more... The South's got more Southern Baptists than Carter has little liver pills. I mean, you got to admit that, right? Those good Southern Baptists will go over to the 32nd Flip-Floppians or whatever, where that old dude Saul, who inhaled and huffed so many leather tanning fumes in his little tent factory that he began to hallucinate Jesuses and things and go blind. Remember when Rush Limbaugh went deaf as a result of his abuse of hardcore street drugs. Saul of Tarsus went blind at one point after having been overexposed to, you do know that the leather tanning business is nasty even in its most modern concept. And you know he was a tent maker. And you know that tents weren't, there was no first century AD nylon, okay? Tents were made out of leather that had to be tanned. And the process was nasty, and it would make you, as they say, madder than a hatter if it didn't kill you first, which it frequently did. So he got all whacked out on tent fumes and, you know, imagine went blind and imagined he heard Jesus. It must have been some powerful tent fumes. And in the process, and then after he went blind and heard Jesus and sort of got some fresh air into him and his sight came back, started writing letters all over the creation, inventing himself a new religion. Little soupçon of Mithraism, a little bit of the Eleusinian mysteries with the Mass, a smidgen of Isis and the dash of Adonis, you know, that kind of thing. And as a consequence of all of this, he invented, really, he did. He invented what we recognize as the early proto-Christianity. And like I said, started writing letters all over creation and wrote them to the various and sundry churches. You know, these little early communist cells where people held everything in common, and told them how to live their lives. You know, because he was basically administering the birth of a new religion. And somewhere, 30-second galoshes or 50-second flip-floppians, I'm not sure which, he tells the women to sit down and shut up. And, you know, do something about your hair, will you, honey? So, please bear in mind, that, and like I said, we ignore this. You know, I've really got a point here, and I can come back to it, I promise. And the point is that, you know, the Southern Baptists, millions of them, like cockroaches scurrying across a floor when the light gets turned on, will come out in record numbers to support Reverend Mac Hoeksterby, because they got a real sense of kinship for their own, which he is. And they will reference 53rd Galoshes or 32nd Flip-Floppians or whatever, and as evidence that God wants Reverend Mac elected and not that heathen Clinton woman. Oh, glory! They will. I'm not kidding. Are you an up-east liberal or an out-west progressive and you think I'm just crazy? You didn't grow up where I grew up. I know of whence I speak. I promise you that can happen. But, you know, it's not just Senator Clinton. I like all of our candidates, and I'll vote for any one of them in the general election. It's also Senator Obama. Because the Southern Baptists will whip their Bible out and start... or something else. But they'll whip their Bible out, and they'll start... they'll go back, and they'll read that business about the mark of Cain, and they'll say, you know, that's when God turned Cain into a Negro. They will! And they will crawl, they will walk, they will drive, they will wind sprint, they will long-distance marathon, they will roll sideways on the road under the influence of strychnine and serpent venom and wrapped up in the spirit and speaking their spirit language to get to the polls to vote for the Reverend Mac Hoeksterby. They will. Because, you know, there's that part about Noah and one of his sons got turned into a Negro, too. Mm-hmm. Sure did. There he is, Saul of Tarsus again. Crazy guy huffing tent fumes arguing that Jesus approved of slavery. Mm-hmm. Sure enough. You betcha. Wouldn't lie to you. Take you right to it. So, John Edwards... oh, they'll go to the 30-second flip-floppians and talk about hair again. Dodd, these are Southern Baptists. They don't take well to Yankees. Biden? Oh, Biden, the whole term paper plagiarism thing will come. But you get my idea, or you get my notion. You get where I'm going, right? Mike Hoeksterby is not a joke. I mean, we're going to have our fun with him. We could do this from now till November. But he is, in fact, pure poison. He is the nightmare of the framers of the Constitution. A man absolutely eaten up. You know, Sinclair Lewis died in 1951 of alcoholism. Well, you know, booze will rot your brain, but guess what? So will fundamentalist religion. And I have a feeling if we captured the Reverend Mike and stuck him in an MRI, we would find all these ventricles sort of drilled through like the holes that a worm makes working through an apple. Brain just all eat up and dead rotten with religion. So please, I'm not trying to be a jerk about this. I mean, we're just us. Now, of course, the fundamentalists would say that I'm being a jerk. But they think anybody who doesn't, you know, believe precisely what they believe is being a jerk. I'm having a little fun, sure. I've, you know, I'm here at the altar. I'm, you know, doing the little who's this thingy with all the crackers and the cookies and the grape juice, and it's got to be a little bit interesting. I got to have my fun. But honest to Pete, this is deadly serious business. And in a way, kind of, you know, even though he's a drop-dead racist and everything, bless little Ron Paul's heart for quoting Sinclair Lewis. When fascism comes to America, it will come wrapped in the flag and carrying the cross. True, true, truer words have never been spoken. War on Christmas update. The Alliance Defense Fund, the right-wing lawyers who spit on their oath every day by representing these fundamentalist freaks, they're going out there and violating the rules of professional conduct by shopping for potential clients, by offering free legal advice to a little Arizona community that the ADF claims was threatened with a lawsuit over the town's Christmas tree. We're talking about Queen Creek, Arizona, that replaced the name Christmas with holiday on the community tree after a liberal legal group, liberals, godless communist liberals, threatened a lawsuit over the use of Christmas in response to the cave-in. Attorneys with Alliance Defense Fund have written a letter to the town's officials explaining the constitutionality of Christmas. Oh, my aching back. So now the residents of a town don't have the right to name their holiday displays as they see fit. They have to be strong-armed by the Alliance Defense Fund. Holiday schmoliday. Christmas schmissmas. I'm in line with the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host, Peter Godbold. Let's win the war on Christmas this year. Kill a Christmas tree before it kills you. Let's not have this next year. Let's kill Christmas good and dead this year. So maybe people can go back to actually enjoying it. Johnson says, statistics, I tell you, scientific statistics. Oh, glory, I didn't know. Prove liberal groups wrong. Let's remember that 95% of Americans celebrate Christmas. At least 90% recognize Christmas as the birthday of Jesus Christ. Really? 90% of America is that drop-dead stupid? 90%? And I guess it's true because, you know, my daughter was riding somewhere with me the other day, and she goes, Daddy, and I go, yeah, baby. And she says, yeah, so-and-so told me the other day that Christmas really is the day that Jesus was born? You know, with that little upspeak question mark at the end. And I said, well, honey, there's no way to know even if Jesus was born. But we just don't know. Because Jesus' real name was Yeshua. I know, a little bit much for a 10-year-old, but when are you going to tell him? Jesus' real name was Yeshua. There's no such name as Jesus in Hebrew. And Yeshua is kind of like John in English. There were lots of them. So about 2,000 years ago, it's a safe bet that there were a whole bunch of Yeshuas born in what was then Roman Palestine. And she looked at me, really? Wouldn't kid you, honey, not about something this serious. So she said, there's no proof that Jesus was even born? I said, not a whit. She said, what about the Gospels? I said, the first of them was written 70 years after he was allegedly born. I said, think about it, Doodle. If they hadn't written down the moment of your birth when you were born, most of the people who were around when you were born would have forgotten what time you were born and what day you were born on by now, and you're just 10? And the first gospel gets out there 70 years later? She looks at me and goes, sounds like there might be some mistakes in there. I said, oh, honey. But she gets it. I said, now, assuming for a moment that he was born, then based on some of the information that is provided, we get an idea that he was born sometime between spring and summer. Because, among other things, the shepherds were watching over their flocks by night, which means that they weren't out in the freezing cold, and even though it's a Levantine climate, it does get cold at night there. And just explained a little bit more to her, and she looked at me and said, wow, Dad. I said, sorry, you know, but you asked the questions, and I'm not gonna pull your leg, honey. I love you too much. Now, on the other hand, and you can take issue with me over this, I gotta look over my shoulder and make sure nobody's coming to the studio. We are still passing along the Santa Claus thing. Sorry, but we are. But, listen, at least I didn't load her up with the Adonis and the Mithras and all of that stuff yet. But my poor kids, go to school, and they've got fundy teachers. And they got fundy students all around them. And, of course, they're real subtle, the fundy students. You don't believe that? You're going to hell. You're going to hell if you don't believe December 25th is Jesus' birthday. Jesus would be 2,007 years old to December 25th. He really would. Yes. And Jimmy Buffett will be 61. So, that's a starting place for us. Now, you, of course, know the phone number for getting in touch with the program, should you wish to do so. And I welcome you to participate as you see fit. Phone call, phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or if you don't need us to pay the freight and you've got your own unlimited long-distance dialing plan, you can help us out by dialing it on your own nickel. That's 304-658-5453. Email comes roaring in to bob@headonradio.com. Listen, we make it easy, so avail yourself of it. You are listening to America's independent liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Across, baby. Christmas goose.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
This is the Head On Radio Network. The horn.
Yeah, my name is Chris.
Join us this Thursday midnight Eastern on Foxed Up. We'll take a listen to the 1963 Christmas Fan Club message the Beatles recorded exclusively for the club members.
In the meantime, Gary Crimble to you, Gary Mimble to you, Getty Babel, dear Christmas, happy birthday, me too.
And you'll hear a Christmas song recorded just for the club series. So be there this Thursday midnight Eastern on Foxed Up, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Merry Christmas, everybody!
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
This is the story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fix stuff. Did some art projects with the kids.
Clean up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up this house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed. And you know what? It was great.
It was a blast.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that didn't last long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really good new friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you who care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
I feel like I can do everything now.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Minutes before the hour, 20 till 7 here on the East Coast. So that makes it, 20 till 4, middle of the late afternoon on the West Coast. And let's see, 11 out there where John Fox is in far, far Australia. Learning my world time zones, as you can tell. You know what? We are constantly under assault by the religion industry. You know that. But the fact is, every once in a while, you know, as they say, and I mean no insult because these are very, very good people, but even a blind hog finds an acorn now and then. And this is one I'm putting in the W column. Can you imagine, I ask, can you imagine that there are actually still places in America that think that they can get away with not making gospel sharps pay tax? No, really. I'm not kidding. Places in America that think that just because you call yourself a minister, that entitles you not to pay your taxes? Yeah, that whole render unto Caesar thing goes right out the window when it comes to, when it comes to Pastor Whackbottom's wallet. But we got one to put in the W column. Members of the clergy will now actually having to be paying a salary tax, just like everyone else, following a vote last night by officials in Boone County, Kentucky. We didn't just win one, we won one in the belly of the beast. 2 years ago, an attorney by the name of Edwin Kagan, fine fella, National Legal Director for American Atheists, filed a lawsuit challenging a local practice which had exempted ministers, priests, rabbis, mullahs, and other clerics from complying with state law in Kentucky and being taxed the same 0.8% as everyone else who works for a living. Kagan relied on the Kentucky state constitution, which forbids any direct or indirect public aid to religious sects or the payment of salaries for the clergy. What he said was that the tax exemption clearly favored religion over non-religion and elevated members of the clergy to a special position where they didn't have to shoulder their fair share of the tax burden. Said he, and I quote, "This levels the playing field and complies with both our state and federal constitutions." Of course, the Boone County, Kentucky, had to be dragged kicking and screaming into the 16th century. Judge Executive Gary Moore said he disagreed with the statute. He said he's going to comply with the state law even though he disagrees. I'd not normally vote for this as much as I disagree with it. He said that he told a group of gospel sharps about it and that, quote, "They seem to understand it, not happy about it." Wow. Not happy about it. 0.8%. Guys that work for minimum wage at the gas station pay it. Wanda down at the Beauty-O-Rama pays it. Fella working at the car lot selling cars pays it. Greeter at Walmart pays it. Oh, no, but not Brother Whackbottom. He's a man of God. And God said he don't have to pay taxes, that he can just ride on the backs of the rest of us who do. Mr. Kagan said that officials should have been abiding by the Constitution 2 years ago, making the lawsuit unnecessary. Another quote from Mr. Kagan: "This is what American Atheists does, though, as a First Amendment watchdog group. We find statutes like this being ignored in communities throughout the country. Officials comply only when you threaten to take them to court." Wonder why. I mean, these officials are sworn to uphold the Constitution, from the lowliest dog catcher to the President of the United States and the justices of the Supreme Court. They're sworn to uphold the Constitution. The Constitution says, you know, nobody gets a break. But had the folks at American Atheists not found this little enclave of religious bigotry in Boone County, Kentucky, Flying Spaghetti Monster only knows how long the gospel hustlers and the rabbis and the mullahs and the yogis and the rest of them would have gotten away with this. 0.8%. And they can't even stand to pay that. Is that as offensive to you as it is to me? 0.8%. I mean, do the math. What is that? That's not 0.8. It's not 80 cents on the dollar. That's 0.8 of a penny. That's less than the widow's mite of biblical reference. And they can't pay it? Reminds me of that story I told the other night about the barber. Policeman goes into the barber, gets his hair cut, goes to pay the barber. The barber says, no, I can't take money from you. You know, you're out there keeping us safe. This one's on me. Comes to work the next morning, there's a dozen hot, fresh donuts on his step. Fireman comes in that day. Cuts his hair. Fireman goes to pay. Barber says, no. Your work is too dangerous, and you work so hard saving people in the direst need. It's on me. Goes home that evening, comes back to work the next day. There's a brand new smoke alarm sitting on his front porch. That day he cuts a preacher's hair. Preacher goes to pay him. He says, no, you minister to the needs of people's spirits. What you do is good and valuable and blessed in the eyes of the Lord. This one's on me. Goes home, comes to work the next day, and there's a dozen preachers standing on his step. Mr. Kagan said, we're pleased with the outcome and that Boone County, Kentucky, will be treating all citizens equally and not waste taxpayer money defending an unconstitutional practice. Why, I ask you, why, in the sweet name of heaven, why do these religion industry hustlers hate our Constitution? What makes a religion industry hustler think that he's better than a guy who changes his oil or pumps his gas? Why does he think he's better than the guy who drives the truck that brings all his groceries to the store? Well, it's because God loves him better than he loves you or me, because they're special. Some of them can even turn crackers into human meat inside your belly. Really. And they can turn cheap wine into blood. Make a cannibal out of you. Sure enough, really. Yeah, they say they can. Now, we've never pulled a David Huckabee and split anybody open to find out. But it's, you know, whether it's preachers or just repiglickins in general, they want everything that the nation has to offer, but they want somebody else to pony up the bucks for it. And it just gets a little tiresome sometimes. My tiny little mind is still reeling at the notion that somebody would willingly not pay taxes even... Well, You get it. Yours is too, I'm sure. Onward and upward. Oh, by the way, I know. You know how I am about the big stories of the day. I assume you've already heard them. I assume you're well aware that there was a fire at a vice presidential office complex today in Washington. Eisenhower Building, is it? And since many of us think quite similarly, okay, that works. That works. Bob, don't presume they hate the Constitution. They don't even know about it. Yeah, everything they need to know is in Genesis. True. Greed and arrogance. Absolutely right. Absolutely right. But, I'm not going to waste a heck of a lot of your time on the fire there at the vice presidential offices. You know as well as I do what that was about. You know as well as I do that in light of the fact, what was the ruling last week? What did the federal judge rule? That the White House and vice presidential visitor logs were not national secrets and that they had to be disclosed in discovery as part of an ongoing lawsuit. Yeah, I think so. And so today there's it was just a freak accident. It started in some electrical wiring. And, you know, it just so happened that those logs were, those visitor logs, the originals, because we was getting ready to have them copied, they were sitting right back there by that wiring. In fact, there's some of the wiring laying on it. Don't know how that wiring got to be all naked and hot and everything, and you know, a cardboard box just goes up like a cardboard box. Took the visitor records with it. I mean, they needed that because going into court and saying the dog ate it, that was going to be a little bit tough because, you know, Barney the dog, he's a little Scots Terrier. He's just a little guy, and Miss Beasley isn't much bigger either. And they can only be force-fed so many White House records before it begins to get a little bit obvious. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't completely destroy the evidence. We've got a boxer mastiff mix here. Who's displayed a penchant for eating Agnes's clothing, and sometimes the evidence doesn't get fully destroyed. Case in point being a multicolored sweater of which she was particularly fond, which got recycled on the lawn not too long back. So you really needed the fire there in the vice presidential residence, office, whatever. You needed that fire. Now, don't worry, America, it didn't get anywhere near five deferment Dick Cheney, you know, Richard B. Dick Cheney, five deaf Dick. He's fine. He's just a heartbeat away from the presidency. Well, a heartbeat and an installed internal defibrillator, but you get the meaning. You know, how sad. Bless his heart, Dan Fogelberg passed away. Younger man than Dick Cheney. Prostate cancer. And Dick Cheney's still going. Wham, 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 wham. But I better not say too much more than that because, you know, Agent Fred might take me down like he did Monday night. And, you know, I don't want a visit from the dudes in the black suits with the skinny ties and the humorless expressions on their face and the little wires coming out of their heads. I don't want that. And I'm a liberal and I'm a Democrat, and that means that I don't have the same kind of free speech that a right-wing freak does. Case in point, out there in Republican world, there's this really skinny blonde person who goes around holding herself out publicly as a female, you know, the one that has the one that has an Adam's apple the size of an eight ball. Well, that creature was on some show on Fox. Oh, wait a minute, The Big Story. Yeah, okay. With John Gibson, you know, the guy that wrote the book about the war on Christmas. John Gibson and Heather Nauert, is that her? Nauert? Yeah, N-A-U-E-R-T, Nauert. Sounds like something Pinky used to say on Pinking in the Brain. Narf! He was on their show. And she was, it was, he was, this person, you know who I'm talking about, was declaring that the Reverend Mac Hooksterby, is actually the GOP's equivalent of Jimmy Carter, and he'd be a disaster, and blah, 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 blah. And among other things, the person slammed Hooksterby for opposing a bill that would have required Arkansas residents to prove they are Americans before they could vote or get social services. Jesus. Oh, what are these people for? We know what they're against, but what are they for? We're against brown people. That's brown people. That's enough. So in the course of doing that, this person said, upon being asked about what Fox is declaring to be Senator Clinton's decline in the polls, this quote: Hillary really is in trouble, which would be fantastic. Pay attention, this is the important part. But I won't believe it until we see the dead body. A senator of the United States, a first lady, former first lady of the United States, and this creature is on a purported news broadcast that is being sent around the nation and the globe, saying that she won't believe that Senator Clinton, that her campaign is no longer what she deems a threat. Quote, until we see the dead body. She won't get a visit from Agent Fred. There will be no humorless men in dark suits and skinny ties with wires coming out of their ears and handguns tucked in their under their armpits. No. She's a repig-lickin'. And as a consequence of that, she gets to openly advocate the murder of any Democrat she chooses. Nothing was done when she suggested that someone put cyanide into the creme brulee of Justice Stevens. Nothing. Nothing was done when she complained that the only problem with Timothy McVeigh was that he didn't blow up the New York Times headquarters building. Nothing. Nothing. I won't believe it until we see the dead body. I won't believe it until we see the dead body. But she's just joshing because she's a big old kidder. That's just how they kid out there in Republican land. Mercy sakes. So we're at the top of the hour. We got some news coming up for you from our friends at the Quality News Network. You can join in the program afterwards if you wish. You know the phone numbers, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your own nickel, 304-658-5453. We'll be back. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob.
This is the Quality News Network. A House panel is challenging the White House over the CIA's secret destruction of interrogation videotapes. The House Intelligence Committee is preparing subpoenas to force CIA officials to tell what they know about when and why the tapes were destroyed and who gave the order. A hearing is set for Friday at which the White House will have a chance to convince a judge to keep courts out of the investigation. In Washington, D.C., a fire inside the historic White House compound forcing the building's evacuation today. One minor injury was reported. Fire crews controlled the flames inside the Eisenhower Executive Building within 1 hour. The adjacent White House was not affected by the incident. Late last night, the Senate approved a $555 billion spending measure, providing funding for 14 federal agencies and $70 billion for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Already approved by the House, the bill now proceeds to the President for signing. President Bush signed new legislation today that will require more fuel-efficient vehicles and increased use of ethanol. The White House calls the new law, quote, a major step toward energy independence and an ease of global warming. On Capitol Hill, Congress passed legislation strengthening the Freedom of Information Act. Penalties have also been enhanced for agencies violating the Act's provisions. In Jacksonville, Florida, city fire officials say three people are missing and feared dead in an explosion that rocked a chemical plant today. The plant manufactures Ecotane, a gasoline additive that reduces tailpipe emissions, according to the lab's website. Authorities are investigating the blast site, but have not released any official findings as to the cause of that explosion. In Baghdad, U.S. diplomatic and military officials are protesting this week's Turkish air invasion into northern Iraq. Turkey is supposed to ask permission from the U.S. to cross into Iraqi airspace. Authorities say they weren't informed until the airstrikes had already begun. In South Korea, the former CEO of Hyundai Motors has won the presidency. 66-year-old Lee Myung-bak has also served as mayor of Seoul. His landslide victory amidst a low voter turnout ends a decade of liberal rule. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Check business just after this message.
I know your secret. Nobody told me, but I know. Every time your little girl wants you to read her a story and you tell her you're too busy, I know. When your boy needs help with homework and you tell him to ask his mother, I know. Your wife asks you whether the warranty is still good on the broken dishwasher and you tell her you're too tired to look for it, I know. You're very good at keeping the secret, but it does take a lot of effort to keep the charade going. It could be very scary and embarrassing if anyone found out. But I know your secret. You can't read. Neither can 93 million American adults. You're in big company. Instead of running scared, become a hero in your own family. Find a local literacy program at your library. It's free. The day you whisper in your wife's ear, "Honey, I can read," just watch how big her smile is.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
The Federal Reserve will lend $20 billion to U.S. banks in an effort to ease the credit crunch. Banks continue requesting the funds, showing a strong need that prompted the Fed to announce four special auctions. U.S. home foreclosures rose 68% last month compared with 1 year ago as homeowners failed to keep up with rising mortgage payments. Nearly 202,000 filings were reported for the month of November compared to just over 120,000 for November of 2006. That's currently one foreclosure for every 617 American households. Morgan Stanley officials disclosed an extra $5.7 billion write-down of mortgage-related assets, taking a fourth-quarter loss to nearly $10 billion. Oracle chalked up a 35% gain in second-quarter profit. Investors had been watching the business software maker with concern in connection with the financial health of the broader tech market. Light sweet crude oil currently trading at $91.24 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Gold at $805.40 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow down 25 points at 13,207. NASDAQ up 5 points at 2601. The S&P 500 down 2 points at 1453. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Praise be, hold glory. We've made it to hour number two here in the Cathedral of Common Sense. I'm Bishop Bob, and I welcome you down to the altar. No strychnine, no snakes, no speaking in tongues necessary. Just good old-fashioned plain English and a desperate passion for the Constitution of this once great republic. Come on along and join in if you wish. You are always welcome, you know that. Okay, journalism moment. I've very badly missed our friends at QNN over the last couple of days as they've been working out some hinks and kinks of the world we live in. That is broadcasting on the razor's edge of technology here on the internet. And, you know, I love the work they do. They're hard working. They've got an ethic that is similar to our own here at the Horn. But sometimes, you know, when you do this stuff day after day after day and you crank out newscast after newscast after newscast, you can get caught up in the language miasma, if you will, and wind up using the same sort of BS journalism speak, and I do not mean Bachelor of Science journalism, that the major media is so fond of. Case in point being the reference in not this past, the last hour's news, to the furor, and justifiably so, this justifiable furor, over, you know, what it turned, you know, the impeachable offense. I mean, come on, it is what it is. White House actively partaking in the decision to destroy evidence of torture, and yet it's referred to in the newscast as harsh interrogation techniques. It wasn't torture. We weren't almost drowning anybody. We weren't threatening to blow anybody's brains all over the wall or anything, or sodomizing anybody with a broom handle. No. They were harsh interrogation techniques. And I'm sorry, the friend or foe, I'm gonna sorta, I gotta call folks on that. Damn! Torture is torture. And I know you gotta vary the language a little bit, but that wasn't a language variance issue. That was using weasel words. Because you know what? We, you, me, us, I, whatever, get to make decisions like that. We get to make that call. We, as sovereigns, individual personal sovereigns, within this constitutional republic founded upon democratic principles, we get to look at the things that our government does, and because of things like the First Amendment, we get to call BS when we see it. And calling torture harsh interrogation techniques falls under that rubric, I'm afraid. Pretty is as pretty does, and torture is as torture does. And torture ain't pretty, and it's not just harsh. Torture is wicked. Torture is evil. Torture is vile. Torture is contrary to every blessed principle that underpins the origins of this ongoing experiment in our country. And we have a right to expect that it will be called by what it is when it is. They weren't harsh interrogation techniques. They were torture. And the fact of the matter is, some of the people involved in it enjoyed it. You have to enjoy it, because the fact is, it's not doing anything. You don't do it to get information. Time after time after time, it has been proven that torture does not yield significant information, life-saving information. The Bush administration cannot point to one instance in which they have tortured somebody that it has yielded anything useful. But they have to call it harsh interrogation methods. And, you know, this is Wednesday. This is prayer meeting night. So I don't feel too funny about applying biblical standards. And if you want to know if it's torture, and frankly, dear leader did the same thing with regard to the girl from Qatif. You know that she was pardoned by the king of Saudi Arabia. That was the only thing that kept her from receiving 6 months in some filthy Saudi hellhole and 200 lashes to take the skin off of her back, was the magnanimity of His Serene Royal Highness. And George Bush said, "Well, if somebody was to do that to one of my girls, I don't know how I'd feel." Huh? Archie Bunker moment. What? I don't know how I'd feel. Truly, 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 that is a brain that has been, probably didn't have much to work with in the first place, but has been severely limited by the abuse of alcohol. I don't know how I'd feel. I know how I'd feel. Someone I love gets gang raped and then, as a result of it, is threatened with a life-ending beating and a six-month prison term in a hellhole prison. I know how I'd feel. I would lose all communication with anything approaching reason. It'd probably wind up in something like suicide by cop. Because it's one of those moments when, you know, the lizard brain takes over and there's, you know, and you're right back there around the monolith, naked as the day you were born, dancing around it to the Richard Strauss's Also Sprach Zarathustra with the bloody bone in your hand. All that human evolution just out the window. Yeah, I don't know how I'd feel if somebody did that to Jenna or Barbie. Really, George, you don't? Well, I'll be dipped. Wait a minute. I better watch what I say or I will be. Jiminy. So, you know, sorry, just had to get that out of my way and, you know, off my chest. Now, meanwhile, down in Gina, Louisiana, what did I say in the last hour about how these right-wingers and pig-lickins don't like to live by the same rules that the rest of us have to live by? Well, you remember when the Gina 6 protests and demonstrations took place a month or so or two ago? Lots of marching, lots of protesting, lots of demonstrating on behalf of the so-called Gina 6 who were threatened with nooses hanging in trees at, you know, dear old Gina High. Well, there are ordinances, and most towns have them, that say, you know, there's certain, if you're going to do something like that, you got to get the permit, you got to post a bond, make sure that, you know, if you tear down the statue of old, you know, old General Gina or whatever, that, you know, there'll be some insurance to pay for the damage. And everybody involved with that protest did that. On the other hand, there is an organization called the National Movement. There are some very easy potty jokes you could do with that, but I'm just going to write by them. The National Movement has filed a federal lawsuit looking for a temporary restraining order to keep the town of Gina from enforcing its parade regulations for what this group out of, you know, God is a God of irony, hallelujah, this group out of Learned, Mississippi, now, I'm not kidding, I wouldn't lie to you, to keep this group from Learned, Mississippi, known as the National Movement, they want to hold a Gina Justice Day, and they're complaining that the town's ordinances are a violation of their 14th Amendment rights. No, really. They want to march on January 21st, Martin Luther King Day, and they want to, sound out their cry for racial purity. And let's see, Barry Hackney is a spokesman for the organization. Learned, Mississippi. Hackney. Trite. They probably got somebody named Trite, too, as well as Hackney. Larry Hackney, Barry Hackney, I'm sorry, says, and I quote, "When a group of, say, minorities or homosexuals want to have a parade, they aren't usually required to put up a bond or pay for police or pay for cleanup." Well, yeah, they are. All seven of the organizations that participated in the September rally, 3 months ago, complied with all of the requirements. No reports of arrests or vandalism after more than 20,000 people rallied in support of the Gina 6. Who is the National Movement? What do they want? Let's see. They want to revoke integration at the University of Mississippi. And they've called on the football coach there. Oh, football fans, you're going to love this. They've called on the football coach there to deintegrate the team. The National Movementists, Movementers? I don't know. Have a lawyer, some goon by the name of Richard Barrett, is demanding that the town pay for the electricity for loudspeakers and electronic equipment, adequate security, restroom facilities, access to drinking water, adequate... drinking water. We can get them a whites-only fountain. Woohoo! Adequate and secure parking... and no noise from hecklers. It's our First Amendment, not theirs. We have a right not to be heckled. Lord. The National Movement of Learned, Mississippi. You think we could maybe get the town's name changed? Like drop-dead ignorant Mississippi or something like that. Sheesh. Let's go to the phones and see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, this is Gerard in Indiana.
Hey, Gerard, how are you?
I'm doing well. I was wondering if that group was represented by Hackney, Trite, and Cliche.
Yeah, they probably are. That's the PR firm.
But the reason I called, I heard a thing on NPR today, and I thought I was going to ask a question. I thought maybe you might have heard about this or knew something more about it. Apparently, the Bush administration has, with a third try in front of a federal court, and I was hoping that possibly Alan might call in and comment on this, if he's listening. They have managed to get the law overturned that limited the amount of driving that over-the-road truckers can do from an 8-hour shift to an 11-hour shift. And I guess my question was, and I was wondering if you'd heard anything, whether, because I can remember a time when, the UAW was pretty, they were almost synonymous with the, or the AFL-CIO was almost synonymous with the trucking.
Yeah, the Teamsters.
Yeah. And the NPR quoted some, I've got a feeling it was probably some trucking owners group that said that the 8-hour shifts were inappropriate because the number of fatalities had gone down, trucker fatalities had gone down over the last couple of years, and that it would cut productivity.
There's that word that our good friend Joe Vecchio hates so much, productivity.
Yeah.
That's news to me. I'll look into it and see if I can find something. I bet you somebody will email me something any minute now, Gerard.
Okay. It just seems so strange that, apparently this was their third try in front of a federal court to get this through. And, what was different than the other two times?
I remember when this rule was proposed. This rule change, this law, I'm not sure if it's an administrative regulation or if it's an actual statute. I suspect it's a reg. And it goes all the way back to, 2003, 2004. And I had folks who drove over the road semis and so forth calling then and saying, this is just going to be awful. Because what it boils down to, if I recall correctly, is by expanding the hours that a guy can spend on the road, it actually extends the hours that a guy extends what his work day is, Gerard. Because we tend to think, and Alan can correct me if he's listening, we tend to think of truck drivers as people who drive trucks, and that's what they do. They get up in the morning and they drive the truck till they go to sleep.
Yeah,
it's not so. Because, there's terminal time and there's time that you spend waiting at the dock for load and unload if you don't actually have to go back and do that yourself. And that all contributes to what your work day is.
Sure.
And so if you expand the work day to 12 hours driving, then, congratulations, you just moved up to 16-hour work day in something where you're getting paid by the blessed mile.
All right. Well, I kind of have a personal connection to this too, because my father, when he was during his work career, was for a lot of years he was a teacher. He was educated as a teacher, but during the summertime when school was off, that's how he earned a living, was as an over-the-road truck driver. And at one point he did it toward the end of his career. He did it full time. He was an independent. He had his own truck, but the same rules applied. The law stated, at least that's what they said in the report today, that, that it would now allow truckers to be actually on the road driving up to 77 hours a week. And it's just another indication of, Bush's corporatism putting profits before people, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, well, it's a part of the miracle of the free market, Gerard.
Yeah.
You know, the free market will take care of that, because the guys who can't drive 77 hours a week will wind up dead, and the free market will have solved the problem.
Yeah. Or like,
I hate them, don't you?
Well, it's like, and like, tell that to the families of the, I mean, last year we had, out here in near South Bend, we had a couple of state troopers who were killed by a trucker who fell asleep at the wheel. And they cited the number of truckers who have died has supposedly gone down, but what are all those people who've been killed or maimed or injured by a tired trucker who maybe himself was not killed but caused an accident?
Yeah, I don't care what you're driving in the way of an ordinary sized automobile, whether it's a armor plated Humvee or a Mini Cooper, you don't win in that collision.
Yeah, you're always going to lose. But I heard that today, and I thought of Alan, so hopefully he'll call in and give us some perspective on that. Maybe.
Well, you know what would cure that?
Impeachment?
Well, that really is the ultimate geritol, isn't it? What would cure that, Gerard, is a resurgence of the vitality of the Teamsters and other unions that represent people who do this kind of work. I cannot imagine.
To me, that's what kind of stood out as a sore thumb in this report on NPR. It was the absence of any reporting on, of a response from the AFL-CIO.
Well, I'm not surprised by that, because it's getting harder and harder to find to find in NPR what I used to listen to NPR for.
Yeah.
Not bias, but just both sides of the doggone story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not there anymore, because they're a little too wrapped up with, brought to you by a generous grant from Archer Daniels Midland.
Yeah.
Well, somebody's got to drive the truck that gets the stuff to and from ADM or Monsanto. Feeding the world Monsanto with genetically modified corn. That kind of stuff is gone, and I don't understand the trucking gig too much to begin with, because I can't see how a human being would sit still for being paid by the mile, or these poor suckers who drive coal trucks up and down our little two-lane highways in West Virginia, who calmly and quietly sit there and agree to be paid by not the minute, not by the mile, not by the hour, but by the ton.
Yeah.
I mean, that's archaic. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that my grandfather battled against, getting paid by the ton loaded and unloaded. I mean, that's 19th century stuff. It's not even 20th. It's 19th century stuff, and that's how we're, but you know what the counter argument is, right, Gerard?
Yeah, they can hire more people that way. Right?
The counter argument the sleaze merchants make is that, if we actually paid people a decent wage, your tomato would go up by a nickel.
Yeah.
I'm not enough of a, I don't think enough of my fellow Americans to pay an extra nickel on a daggum tomato, an extra 13 cents on a head of lettuce. This stuff's going through the roof anyway, and it's not going through the roof because of driver salaries. Prices are going through the roof because of the cost of getting the fuel that makes the truck go from point A to point B.
Yeah, late. Seems like that's the first thing they attack is the labor cost.
Well, our good buddy Wayne could tell you, Gerard, because he's got significant experience in it. It's always the labor cost that gets attacked. We're for any state that has an issue regarding its prevailing wage law will eventually be attacked by the United States Chamber of Commerce and those other slugs. Who will say, if we didn't have to pay a decent wage to the people building our schools, we could build two schools for the price of one.
Yeah.
And it's just a lie. Because the way the money actually shifts around is in that instance, instead of paying decent wages to the people building the school, the contractor on the job funnels the money into his own pocket, and nothing happens to the baseline production cost of the building. And the similar thing takes place with these trucking companies. It's not like the truckers are going to get paid anymore for the extra work. Mileage rate is mileage rate is mileage rate, and if you ain't moving, you ain't making money. But on the other hand, if you can get more work out of them, that's more profit to the bosses and the managers. And it's another little free market miracle in our world of crony capitalism.
It's, you know, it's getting more and more, you know, that's one thing. It gets more and more obvious that really, if you think about just pure free market, well, I always think of it, you know, like Mike Malloy always says, he talks about the Bush crime family. A pure free market is kind of what they have in the Cosa Nostra. You know, if one guy, you know, if the guy starts muscling in on your territory, well, you just go over and get him whacked, and then you take over here, you know.
God, I hate to think of it in those days. Yeah, but that's how they operate,
you know,
isn't it?
That's like the ultimate free market. And, you know, it's kind of, you think about it on a global scale, that's really kind of what goes on, what has been going on for the last 6 years. You know, our guy Saddam, we didn't like what he was doing, so we went over there and eventually had him whacked, and now we're in there and building our $6 million embassy. $6 million embassy.
Well, I wouldn't call it an embassy. I'd call it more of a boondoggle, and you know it's going to look real good when that dam goes the way of all flesh up in Mosul that we're probably going to take out too. But you know, it's a separate story altogether, I guess.
Well, hopefully Alan will call in, because I'd really like to hear what his take is on that.
All right. Well, that may be him on the line. I'm not sure. We'll find out. Thanks, Gerard.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye. Our good friend Gerard out in South Bend, Indiana. Hi. Welcome to the program. Who have I got?
Sorry, Gerard. It's only David.
Hey, David. What's up?
Well, you know, there are precious few opportunities for me to wring some more value out of my public college education, but as an alum of the University of Tennessee from the engineering department, let's make sure a very simple definition on this most hated word in labor relations, productivity, gets a little coverage. You've gotten really close, but I want to drive it home. You know, I want the nail to be flush with the timber.
Swing away.
Productivity, dear folks, does not mean just more stuff. It's not like rather than making stuff for 8 hours, you make stuff for 9 hours, and there's more stuff because you worked more hours and got paid for that hour. Productivity means more stuff per time increment. That means that somebody had to work harder, more diligently, maybe with some different equipment in this day and time, most likely not. What it means is that some overseer, I should almost say slave driver, some overseer gets more stuff out of the same guy with the same equipment in the same amount of time, and none of that translates into extra money for the guy making the stuff.
Actually, it translates into a net loss in the long haul, doesn't it?
Well, if the worker takes the time to say, wait a minute, I did 10 units of saleable stuff a month ago, and now I'm doing 11 in the same time frame, if he wants to take a look at his pay scale in units of saleable stuff, yeah, he just worked himself into a pay decrease. And he may work a 10% shorter week or some sort of a thing like that because he got it out in fewer hours. So he's either A, going to get paid the same for busting his ass or her, body even more, or they're going to bust it, get it done, and then get paid less because there's fewer hours required to get the same amount of stuff out the door. It's capitalism in its ugliest form. The man that owns the entity that owns the tools of production gets all of the extra.
Now, understanding, of course, this is not my long suit. I'm trying to follow here, and some things are occurring to me, David. When you cram, oh, let's see, who was it? Rudyard Kipling in If, talking about filling every minute with 60 seconds run or something like that. When you start trying to cram 80 seconds into a 60 second minute and 90 minutes into a 60 minute hour, doesn't at some point in time don't you, and again I'm no math guy and certainly no engineer, but don't you run up against the law of diminishing returns?
Not for the guy that's getting the extra stuff out the other end. The worker gets screwed.
Okay, because what I'm trying to sort here is, so you know the guy, the boss man, he doesn't care how many things are defective, just that X things were produced.
So long as they're saleable.
So long as the rube doesn't find out till he gets it home.
All right, let's make it really simple. I'm a factory owner. I have one employee. To start the example, my one employee made 10 saleable, S-A-L-E, sale, makes 10 saleable units a week in a week's worth of labor, and I pay him X amount of dollars. I start being encouraging, badgering, manipulative, demanding, screaming, laughing and telling it'll all be better in a few years, you know, pie in the sky. And I get my one producing worker to make 12 saleable units in a week. Well, his weekly pay doesn't go up. He's paid for the hour.
Right.
Okay. If I can sell 12 units, I, Mr. Ownership Guy, I have the same labor cost, but I've got more units. Okay. I'm a happy guy. All right. My sales force is really dead end, and they can only sell 10 units. Now then, if I badger this worker into making 12, I tell him not to come to work on Monday, and his pay goes down. That's the two sides of the coin when you're talking about productivity.
What a screw job. Now, do the people who are getting screwed understand? I mean, and I'm asking you to speak for people who might not, but do the guys on the line sit around talking about this, or do they? Well, you know, I ain't got to work Monday. Think I'll go fishing.
Bob, you bet your ass they know it. The first time I worked outside of my family for money. It was June the 12th, 1965. I was earning money to get a college degree. I worked in the summer to go to school in the winter. And it was a union plant, and they knew it then, and they discussed it. Now, they might not be able to go to a Burroughs hand crank calculator and tell you the percentage by which they were being screwed, but intuitively, I say again, you bet your ass they knew it. And they, when I retired a year ago, those same guys still knew it, although all the faces have changed. They still knew it, and their alternative was to sit at home and starve to death.
And it never comes into their mind. I mean, it just never comes into their mind that maybe they could stand up on their hind legs and demand that they get treated like human beings.
In this day and time, with the house on the hill that Ronnie Reagan gave everybody that owns the tools of production, who are you talking to? Come on now. No, they don't. They know not to try. You know, you won't get the end sounded firmly on the word union before Oh, look. You were absent 2 times last year, and I don't recall you gave me an excuse. My leg was broken, but I don't recall your excuse. You may go now.
And most, and speaking largely of the South, most states have laws that are set up to protect that employer and nothing in the way of protecting the worker.
All Southern states are right to fire. You know, because every time anybody goes to work, the way most common industrial people, industry, in light industry hires people nowadays, I don't know if you realize this or not, but if you were to go into the workplace today and you were, say, there's a guy that makes widgets down the road from you. Hi, I'd like to make widgets for you. We don't do any hiring. You need to go to ABC Employment Agency or ABC Temp Agency. And you go and you make your application to ABC Temp. Well, the guy that makes the widgets calls ABC Temp and says, send me 3. So some people at about 40% less than what the widget factory will pay if they're hired, you know, three bodies show up on Monday morning. And they call through them, and they finally say, you've been accepted to be part of our 30-day probation period after they've worked 4 weeks. And you work the 30-day probationary period, and when they hire you as part of your sign-in for all aspects, and this is directly out of what I watched 100 times, you sign a form, and I forget what the euphemistic phrase for it is, but essentially you say, I understand I am here purely at the discretion of my employer and may be dismissed without cause for any reason determined by the employer at any moment in time.
Yellow dog contract.
No, that's not what I heard it called. I can't remember what I heard it called, but it's essentially, you have turned in your resignation the day you're hired. So if a supervisor that has had a tough, tough time with his wife for 6 weeks, and the last time he saw her leaving the door on Friday night, she was in a pair of tight red pants, and some kid got a red sweatshirt on Monday morning, you with a red shirt, clock out.
You're done.
And the kid in the red shirt, no matter how good he's been, doesn't matter, because the kid in the red sweatshirt signed a form. I am here at the discretion of my employer. I may be terminated at any time for any reason. So, you think those guys are going to try to organize?
No. And no.
And
let's be honest. It's not a modern problem. It's the problem that has beset any attempt to organize workers from time immemorial. If I lose my job, I lose my life. And not life.
No. Forget style. No. It's life. And very honestly, and I say this as a kid that paid his way through college, started out as a shop steward, and because I was good enough as a shop steward, they made me a supervisor hoping to fire me because they thought, well, wait a second. You know, he's such a troublemaker. We'll make him supervisor, and then we can get rid of him. Well, that didn't work out for him either. I had a career after that. But anyway, it's tougher now, 10 times tougher now, to organize, because you've got these I quit clauses built into your employment application, and you've got a completely toothless, horribly ugly NLRB. Oh, my Lord, that doesn't resemble anything that I understood the NLRB to actually be about 40 years ago. Forget it.
Well, no. Well, that's par for the course, David, because the NLRB has absolutely nothing to do with relations with labor, you know, National Labor Relations Board. They have nothing to do with national with labor relations any more than the Consumer Product Safety Commission has anything to do with protecting consumers from bad products. The Consumer Product Safety Commission protects products from consumers, just as the NLRB protects the nation's businesses from working people?
Short version, Bob, at every turn of the wheel, at every turn of the wheel, starting with Reagan, progressing on through, Clinton did a fine job of fighting it off for 8 years, but where you're dealing with Reagans and Bushes and neocons and Republicans, it is as plain as the nose on your face. A Bush Fox will always be put in charge of the citizens and House.
Depressing, you know? Sorry, but it just is. I'm not sitting here every night screaming, "Workers of the world, unite! You have nothing to lose but your chains." And you know, when I get done, I close the microphone and whistle the Internationale or anything. But Jesus, how about some basic fairness?
No, not now. Mm-mm, no. Now, while we're talking about basic fairness, and I want to make sure that the plethora—that's the big word for the day. I just was reminded of that one earlier today. One little reminder about this extra hour for truckers.
Yeah.
You know, trucker work situations, work rules, work days vary drastically. If you're working for an honest, caring, reasonably run big regional or national trucking firm, and I don't want to call any names because I don't know which ones are the good ones, but you've got a few, you've got some basic protections, because if you've got, you know, it's nothing for a national trucking firm to have 2,000 rigs on the road at any point on the clock 7 days a week. Well, you just can't be making yourself vulnerable, because if you've got your name on the side of that tractor and that trailer, and you've got a direct employee driving it, and this guy goes completely nuts for any number of reasons, he has some serious liability. Because a second-year lawyer, if the driver of that truck makes a real mess of a situation, as the owner of the rig, the employee of the guy that did it, there's a lot of stuff that goes really, really sideways. Now, on the other end of the scale, you know, if we've got David's Truck and Garage Door Company, and when I'm not driving, I build garage doors, but when I can get given a load that needs to go from Elk North, West Virginia to Elk North, Montana, it's a flat rate. It's X $100, and it's all on me.
Yeah, fuel included.
All of it. You know, they used to be called gypsies, now they're called independents. It doesn't matter. You know, and they're these poor guys that I should say there are these benighted people, because some of them are women nowadays. You see a lot of women driving over the road trucks, and this is about over the road. And they need to get from one spot to another spot, and it may be 2,000 miles. Well, you're gonna drive, and then you're gonna stop, and then you're gonna drive, and then you're gonna stop, and then you're gonna drive, blah blah blah. Well, here's a little something to think about. We just went to, what, 10 hours a day? Right?
I thought Gerard said 8 to 12.
Well...
But anyway.
Never mind what the exact number is. If you're an independent driver and you are required by law to only drive this many, but now it's been upped by a couple of hours, think about this for a while, America. That's a day-to-day situation. The clock resets at midnight. If it is 12 hours rather than 10 hours, 12 from 24 is 12. That means you've got 12 hours to come down, get sleepy, and rest. And then you've got to be up and going again. So whatever that extra time is in any 24-hour time period, it's still 24. You got 2 hours left. And you may need to do that. If you're going New York to San Francisco with a dedicated load of something, and anybody that has studied anything about ergonomics, industrial efficiencies, worker safety, 8 hours, almost anybody can be safe. whoa, hold it. 8 to 9, the ninth hour, things start getting a little dicey. Ooh, Lordy, the 10th hour, it's not just one more hour. It's another hour when you're already dog tired. Because it's on that 24-hour clock, you got a couple hours left to get it together again. So you're either eating whites or you're sleepy.
And depending on what you're doing, like I said, some portion of that might be spent at the terminal, some portion of that sitting on the dock waiting to get loaded, some portion spent sitting on the dock waiting to get unloaded, and it doesn't count against your hours behind the wheel.
If you're working for somebody like, as a for instance, probably a CF or a Schneider or somebody like that, you get some help there. But if you're David's truck company, and David's truck company is David, and an 8-year-old rig that you bought third hand that only had 1,200,000 miles on it, none of that matters. You're going to be behind that wheel every way you can, every minute that you can, going as fast as you can. And so what if I only got 3 hours a night rest for 3 days in a row?
Yeah, I'm getting a comment from.
Is that a family in a minivan, or is that a character out of Harry Potter?
Yeah, I'm getting a comment out of the chat room here. And at 12 hours, you start hallucinating, and the white lines start knocking against the bottom of the truck.
That's one possibility. Or you imagine that you're in your living room, and you don't have to do anything because all that scenery just goes underneath you. You can take your hands off the wheel for 1 second and nothing happens. Ooh, I wonder if I take my hands off the wheel for 5 seconds. Ooh, nothing happens. It's just scenery rolling underneath me. I think I'll go get that empty Gatorade jar. I think I'll take a leak because I've had so much coffee. Lord knows I don't dare stop. I'll lose 6 minutes.
You know,
all right, I've drawn enough of an ugly picture.
No, well, but whether we're talking about people behind the wheel of a truck, or nurses in a hospital. You know, we're still, you know, the nurses strike has a lot to do with hours and staffing. There is real heroism, David, being shown by people who ought not have to display it.
You're exactly right.
You know, people who are working insane hours. The off-the-clock policies of Walmart, where, you know, it's the end of hour 8, and you pa-ching, and you're done. And they say, come here, got some shelves to stock. Oh, I just clocked out, man. Well, that's why I'm telling you we got shelves to stock now. You're off the clock. Well, I got to get home. Not if you want a job tomorrow, you don't.
No, they won't say that. Oh, golly. I've got to make my decision about who gets sufficient out. Well, yeah.
You know, we need team players here.
Well, what they'll say is, I've got to make decisions about hours next week and next month. When you drop below a certain number of hours, you don't have any coverages. Oops.
Coming, boss.
Exactly. Yes, sir. I'm right there, sir. Don't let these chains clank and... Hey, don't let them annoy you, sir. I'll be right there.
Jesus. And this is just supposed to go on forever, and we're supposed to like it. And, you know, and there's no consequence. That's the other thing. This is all done without regard to consequence. You know, I don't guess it's a year now that hateful old freak Milton Friedman's been in the dirt. But this is all part and parcel of what he said.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
That all human bone, human blood, human sinew, the spirit, the mind, whatever, all must be subrogated to the needs of the corporation. And that if you treat them like crap and you make them desperate enough, people will do anything.
Bob, I'm going to leave you with this. Through a couple of circumstances over the last 5 years, I've been in the room, and they didn't know me. I've been in the room when guys were trimming the ends off the $8 cigars, and they were pulling the cork out of the $100 scotch. And there's a phrase, there'll always be replacements. And they just smile at each other. The way things are right now, even if a third of any manufacturer, any light-duty manufacturing facility's people fell over, just didn't show up, there would be about a 2 to 4 week blip in efficiency figures. And there are enough people that will work under any circumstance. I guarantee you, if you've got a plant with 75 people and 25 of them just don't show up in less than a month, the men that receive the big profits, the people that control the operation, they will not even remember that it happened. They'll have to be reminded by somebody. Oh, JR, we had that, you know, there was that thing about the 25 went away. Oh, yeah, that's right. I see now why our figures were down in September. Thanks for reminding me. People are back to being little tiny engines. There's no soul to us as far as they're concerned. There's no human worth to us. We're little bundles of muscle turning little cranks so that money comes out where they want it to come out.
Cogs in a wheel. Put pegs in hole. Put pegs in hole.
You got it. Well, I got to get out of the way. I've been negative enough. Gee willikers.
I'm not real concerned about negativity. I'm a lot more concerned about getting, because you know this isn't hypothetical. These are realities.
No. And I promise you all, a big you. I promise you all. I speak from experience. It's one of the things that made walking away from it very desirable.
Got your soul back?
Well, I was not involved in the end of it that would have to enforce those sorts of things. And I made a bad reputation for myself by speaking against such things. And that's very true. I just, you know, I was a guy on the sidelines. I was watching it. But after a time, as I had just presented myself and done what I've always done, talk to anybody about anything and say what I had on my mind, I had men and women in a plant say, we didn't think people like you existed on the salaried level. Wouldn't it be something if you were the general manager? And I said, I couldn't be. I wouldn't make it through the first week. And they would have been writing the papers for 3 days at the end of the first week to run my ass off. Because I can't see what to do to people. I can't accept it. I wouldn't. And after a time, when I got to a certain point in my work life, I didn't have to. And I made some sacrifices and I stepped away from it because I didn't want to watch it anymore.
And how many years?
Oh, as a guy holding a job?
Yeah.
1962 to 2006.
Jesus.
And there were breaks after 1962 because I would work, you know, 3 months, sometimes 6 months, and then go to college the rest of the year. I graduated high school in 62, and I literally worked my way through college. Things were cheaper then. That's when you could work for 3 to 6 months and pay for the balance of a 12-month period at a state university. And then I would go back and I would work and then I would go to school, blah, blah, blah. And I began full-time employment after my Appalachian Co-op program to get through school. I started work full-time year-round in 1968. Salary. So I got to watch some interesting stuff go by.
Yeah, you got to see a lot of change.
Oh, to be sure. To be sure.
And most of it, not, and most of it, not for the good.
No, 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 no. In the position that I had the last 4 years, I would walk through the floor and I would be pulled aside by people. What about this? What about that? Why this? Why that? How come they can't? And because of my position, then once or twice a year, the grand poobah would come to town, and there would be a dinner somewhere, and I would get to hear what the guys that owned the tools of production thought about the guys that were making them all that money, and it was disgusting.
Glad you made it through it.
So, lucky me. You know, I gave them the I'll be going now letter, and that was that.
Now you're making that long long walk to the mailbox every 30 days.
No, it's an automatic deposit. The first year I called every, for those associated with Social Security, the first Wednesday in every month, it's a very bright day. So every third Thursday of the first 8 months, I called the bank for the automatic update on your account. Let's see. Punch 2-4 deposit. Boink. Yeah, buddy, I got it again.
He shoots, he scores.
Exactly.
From the short side.
Exactly.
David, have a good night.
Anyway, I shall. You too. And all the best to all the audience.
All right. Take care.
Talk to you later. See ya.
Bye now. The stories that you guys have to tell, that is what creates the privilege of doing this show for me. We've put 2 hours behind us. A little tunage that came to mind, and then we'll do news. Come back with hour three, your thoughts, your cogitations, your cussing, your discussing. That, in fact, is what conversation radio is all about. And it only happens one place, right here, on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
If I ever get home to Houston.
This is the Quality News Network. A third United Nations sanction against Iran will be discussed by several major world powers this week. Senior U.S. officials will be joined by telephone with representatives from China, Russia, Germany, France, and Britain. So far, Chinese and Russian officials have not agreed on final elements of a resolution. Earlier this month, a U.S. National Intelligence report indicated that Iran had ended its nuclear weapons program in 2003, making a third U.N. sanction questionable. A congressional panel is challenging the White House over the CIA's secret destruction of interrogation videotapes. The House Intelligence Committee is preparing subpoenas to force CIA officials to tell what they know about when and why the tapes were destroyed and who gave the order. In Washington, D.C., a fire inside the historic White House compound forced the building's evacuation today. One minor injury was reported. Fire crews controlled the flames inside the Eisenhower Executive Building within 1 hour. The adjacent White House was not affected by that incident. Late last night, the Senate approved a $555 billion spending measure, providing funding for 14 federal agencies and $70 billion for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Already approved by the House, the bill now proceeds to the Oval Office. President Bush signed new legislation today that will require more fuel-efficient vehicles and increased use of ethanol. The White House calls the new law a major step toward energy independence and in easing global warming. In Jacksonville, Florida, city fire officials say three people are missing and feared dead in an explosion that rocked the chemical plant today. The plant manufactures Ecotane, a gasoline additive that reduces tailpipe emissions, according to the lab's website. Authorities are investigating the blast site, but have not released any official findings as to the cause of that explosion. In Baghdad, U.S. diplomatic and military officials are protesting this week's Turkish air invasion into northern Iraq. Turkey is supposed to ask permission from the U.S. to cross into Iraqi airspace. Authorities say they were not informed until the airstrikes had already begun. In South Korea, the former CEO of Hyundai Motors has won the presidency. 66-year-old Lee Myung-bak has also served as mayor of Seoul. You're listening to the Quality News Network. A check of business is next.
Behaving in a civil manner is the foundation of a civilized society. The Roman philosopher and emperor Marcus Aurelius said, "The happiness of your life depends on the quality of your thoughts. If you think in a civil tone, you will reflect civility to others. When we are civil, we aren't at war. We aren't fighting. When we are civil, there is no crime. When we are civil, we enrich the lives of all the people we meet. When we are civil, we are healthier and happier." The Russian author Leo Tolstoy wrote, "Happiness does not depend on outward things, but on the way we see them. It is our choice to be civil rather than hostile or aloof. Sharing our inherent goodness contributes to the common weal in a way that benefits not only our society, but ourselves, deeply, importantly, and eternally." For more information, click on the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has been named Time magazine's Person of the Year. Time editors say Putin imposed stability that restored Russia as a world power. The magazine recognizes leadership that shapes the world, but stresses it is not an award or endorsement. U.S. home foreclosures rose 68% last month compared with 1 year ago as homeowners failed to keep up with rising mortgage payments. Nearly 202,000 filings were reported for the month of November compared to just over 120,000 for November of 2006. Morgan Stanley officials disclosed an extra $5.7 billion write-down of mortgage-related assets, taking a fourth-quarter loss to nearly $10 billion. Oracle chalked up a 35% gain in second-quarter profit. Investors had been watching the business software maker with concern in connection with the financial health of the broader tech market. And student lender Sallie Mae's stock price sank to a five-year low after its CEO warned investors that a dividend cut may be needed to keep it out of the red. Light sweet crude oil trading at $91.24 a barrel. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow down 25 points to end at 13,207. The NASDAQ up 5 points to end at 2601. S&P 500 off 2 points to end at 1453. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Big old glass iced tea. Delivered only moments ago by the lovely and talented Agnes. Took a break from cracking the whip to make homework get done. Made sure that poor little me doesn't sit back here being parched. Bless her heart. Now, it's about 11 minutes past the hour, and we will probably wind up just roaring right through this hour. I hate to keep people on hold, and I will come to this call. If you're listening on hold now, I'll come to you just in a matter of seconds. But I mentioned something, and I hate to mention stories and then not get around to them because people want to. Well, I've had a couple of questions. What about the Montana story, Bob? Well, they've got a law school at the University of Montana. No surprise. Since this is prayer meeting night, we focus on these stories. And the Christians are accusing the University of Montana School of Law of discriminating against them, persecuting them. They're persecuting us. Yeah, these students have filed a lawsuit in federal court, you know, just like the national movement filed a lawsuit in federal court. In this case, challenging the law school's decision to withdraw official recognition of a student-led chapter of the Christian Legal Society. The law school had received numerous complaints from students and faculty about the Christian Legal Society. And it was a vote by the entire student body. Now, what was the earlier theme? Rules and majority rule are not for these people. This sort of popularity vote is contrary to the way the First Amendment is supposed to work. We've heard liberals screaming for a long time that the First Amendment is supposed to protect the rights of the minority. Suddenly, on a college campus, there are a few minorities like Christian students these days. Yeah, okay, you're a minority. Right. On a college campus in a country where 80% of the people say they believe in some kind of a god, you're a minority. Gotcha. Casey Maddox, litigation counsel for the Christian Legal Society's Center for Law and Religious Freedom. How is it they've always got one of these well-funded centers? Now he says the First Amendment should not be applied differently based on a person's beliefs. Well, they didn't. No one's stopping these people from speaking. Lord, 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 I hate a liar. Nobody's stopping these people from speaking. Nobody's quashing their right to free speech. Arguably, they can sit there and drink their strychnine, roll on the floor and speak in tongues, whatever the Spirit moves them to do there at the University of Montana Law School. But I'm guessing while they're doing that, they're not working on their case briefs, and they probably won't make moot court or law review. All they did was remove, by virtue of a democratic process, the school sanction of the organization. See, this is backhanded conservative fake journalism because the goobers won't tell us what it is the CLS was doing. Although you've probably got a pretty doggone good idea, don't you? Proselytizing, trying to ram their weirdo fundamentalism down people's throats. When you know, law school ain't cheap, and the vast majority of people who attend it are not there to fool around. They're there to put in the 3 years, learn how to do it, and get out in the world and start making the 70 large for the 3,500 billable hours per year. for some law firm that defends, you know, Snake Farm and Allsnake against people that it's trying to screw. This sort of popularity vote is contrary to the way the First Amendment is supposed to work. It's not a popularity vote. It was a Democratic vote based inquiring as to whether or not university funds should be used to maintain a sectarian religious organization inside a law school. And it would appear that these young barristers took a hard look at the First Amendment and said, no, we don't need to be violating the First Amendment by giving school money to a bunch of snake-handling freaks. But they're being persecuted! Somebody needs to show these goobers what persecution means. Get them a text or something. Not getting the university to pay for you to sit down and roll around on the ground and speak in tongues is not persecution. But, you know, I'm proud because it's a good sign. Montana may be waking up. You never know. Some of this might actually sort of bleed over into, ooze southward into Wyoming. Do I have my map right? Yeah, there's Montana. There's Wyoming. Because there ain't no way it's getting into Idaho. Mm-mm. No. But it is a good sign. It's a good sign for democracy and the separation of church and state. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the program. Sorry you had to wait.
Hey, Bob, this is Alan.
Hey, Alan, we've been taking your name in vain tonight.
Yeah, I listened to part of that, or all of it. I like the rules the way they are. I hope they don't change them.
What are the rules right now?
Well, it worked pretty good for me. You have to take a 10-hour break after driving 11 hours. And you can't be on duty total of driving and on the dock. You can't be on duty for more than 14 hours.
Well, it sounds to me, if what I understand is correct, that they are trying to change the rules and that those numbers are going to go up.
Uh-huh. It works pretty good for me because I do dedicated where I just drop and hook. So I don't have to wait on the dock much, but in order to get that, I had to give up pay to get this job of dedicated work. Otherwise, I'd be waiting at loading docks all the time, which I thought was kind of crazy because I didn't get paid for it.
Well, there's the rub. You don't get paid.
Mm-hmm. So now I get paid less, but I drive more, which I think is more dangerous.
Yeah. Not to get into your private business or anything, but are most of the guys that you know out there, is this all on a per mile basis?
Yes, I think most of it is on a mile. We get paid by the mile. And some guys don't, or some guys get paid for when they stay at a dock for a certain amount of time, but the company I work for doesn't seem to do that. Well, they claim to do over 4 hours if you're stuck at a place, or maybe longer than that. But you have to go through a lot of paperwork or whatever to get paid for that, so it's not really even worth it.
Well, it's a tough job without a doubt. Now you talked about pay and stuff, so you're not an independent. You're working for somebody. Have you done the business where you have to sit around and you hang out at the dock and you wait and blah 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 blah? What does that do to your ability to get stuff from point A to point B?
It makes it pretty tough to wait a long time, and then you can't split up your day after that because your day starts, like if you drive 50 miles to get there and then you wait for 4 hours, and then that takes your day starts when you first start driving, and you can just only go for 14 hours. So that kind of messes things up. So I guess they want to change the rules on that so somebody could take a 4-hour break and then they could keep driving or something like that. I don't really understand it that much.
Just you go when you're supposed to go, and you stop when you're supposed to stop.
Yeah, that's what I like. Just dedicated work. I just drive. I can't drive over 11 hours. I usually just drive like 10 at the most, or 9 or 8, and then I take a 10-hour break and drive some more. I just keep on going like that. It works pretty good.
It kind of makes your days run together, though, doesn't it, Alan?
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes I think I need to time to change and do something else. You can't really be a trucker all your life.
No, but it sounds like you've got the right attitude for it. Do you ever, when you stop at the truck stop or to refuel or whatever, do you ever hear drivers talking about sort of the grind of it all and the toll it takes on them?
Oh, yeah. I listen to those guys on CB sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I bet there's a lot of that there.
Yeah. A lot of profanity.
Well, that too. And then again, as we know from last night's conversation, you got the lady at the Subway trying to convert you to Jeebus, you know, along with your ham and Swiss.
Yeah, I meant to ask Mark Levine about that. How would he handle a situation like that? I guess he would have argued more with her.
No, he would have. I bet you he would have just given her a good old fashioned shalom and moved along. You know.
Yeah.
What a bunch of,
oh yeah, let me tell you that Michael Parenti, you've heard of him.
Mm-hmm.
He said that during the Italian fascism, that they used to loan employees from one company to the other without the employees' consent. Well, this company I work for, it did me that way one time for Walmart groceries, and I had to wait at this place like every two hours, had to go in and check and see if I had a load, and I didn't like that at all, and I told them to either get me home or get me back to what I was doing before, and I had a real big argument with the company about that, and then it was a real coincidence that evening after we debated about that, me and the boss, an employee for the same company I worked for doing the same thing got killed. I guess he was like, finally got him a load about midnight, and he took off and fell asleep at the wheel and hit a bridge column.
Lord. Dangerous business.
Yeah.
And I don't even know what the number of, no, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to change the subject, but I don't.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask you about the energy bill today. It's like, is there another giveaway to the big companies, and they took out the solar tax credits? There we go again.
I know, and there's supposedly some stuff that I'm supposed to get worked up about raising the fuel economy averages to 30 miles a gallon. Shoot, they ought to be raised to 50.
And they want it done by 2020?
Yeah, that sounds right.
That's ridiculous.
Well, we could do it in we could do it in a lot fewer years than that. And I ran across a story and shifted along to John Fox toward the end of the day yesterday. One of those don't know quite how to feel about it stories. Apparently, there's a company that buys cars, regular cars, rips the engines out of them and converts them to electric. And apparently the plan is for those cars to begin being sold in Walmart in the next few years. And, we're talking about Chrysler PT Cruisers, Mini Coopers, that kind of thing, turning them into electric vehicles, and you're going to buy them at Walmart. On the one hand, I say, goody, more electric cars would seem to be a pretty good idea. But on the other hand, why does it have to be Walmart?
Yeah, I wonder what kind of special tax credit or whatever they get out of that.
I don't know. I don't know if that's something that's in the energy bill. It's an interesting question.
I wonder what company also that they're working with that does that.
Well, it's a it is a specific company, I think, down in North Carolina. And I mean, they've got an assembly line and everything, but it kind of looks like it works in reverse, because the first thing they do is yank out the gasoline engine, and then they install the electric engine, and where the gas tank and stuff was, I think becomes a big space for lithium ion, big old lithium ion batteries.
So what do they put the gasoline motor in there in the first place for?
Well, I mean, that's how they're manufactured. They buy them, and then they modify them.
Uh-huh.
And their profit lies in whatever it is you get, they put their profit margin into the vehicle based on what they bought it for, and what the time that they've spent modifying it, and then what you pay for it on the floor at Wally World.
Oh, it sounded like such a joke. Well, it seemed like it'd be a lot better just to make a vehicle primarily for that purpose.
Well, it seems like it'd make a lot more sense for auto manufacturers to just start making electric cars, because people want them. But the auto industry, I mean, look, in a year when we saw gasoline go from, $50 a barrel to $60 to $70 to $80, whatever, there's the Chrysler Corporation. Not just Chrysler, because they're a closely held company now. There's Chrysler introducing the new Dodge Charger with the Hemi head engine and 319 cubic inch engine that gets 8 miles to the gallon, and yeehaw. Not offering electrics or biodiesels or flex fuels or no. They're coming out with new gas guzzlers, and it's not just Chrysler. Heaven knows. The American auto industry is having to, and we saw the same thing in the mid 70s in the energy crisis. Then took them 4 or 5 years to figure out that the American people were ready to drive something that didn't drink so daggum much gas.
I remember back when Nixon was president, I kept thinking that we're going to come out with smaller, lighter cars in the next year, and then the next year come along and new models come out and they'll be great big.
No, yeah. I remember seeing gasoline hit 60 cents a gallon and people just, fainting dead away. 60 cents a gallon? Are they crazy?
You know that speech that Jimmy Carter, that famous speech on energy that Jimmy Carter made about 1978?
Yeah, yeah.
And he gave it from the Oval Office. I thought it was just great. I have a copy of it on my laptop. But I was on C-SPAN the other day listening to a speech by Huckabee, and it sounded like he was just copying that speech, almost like you would think it's almost like word for word a speech that Jimmy Carter gave 30 years ago.
Well, yeah, and to a certain extent that's sort of what he's going for, because Huckabee is trying to be a little bit of an outsider. He's trying to endear himself to people who are tired of the same old, the same old, same old. It's part of being of trying to generate some sort of an appeal, not just to the fundamentalist religion industry right wing snake handlers, but to make himself come across as just sweet and genuine and southern. And yeah, I think you're right, Alan. He is trying to play on the Jimmy Carter shtick. But he doesn't have, by any stretch of the imagination, and would not have if he started now and tried for the next 200 years to have in his entire body the moral and ethical qualities that Jimmy Carter has in his little finger.
Now, Summer, when I want to think of a Christian, a true Christian, I think of Jimmy Carter. It's like He's the one who claims to be Christian, but he would have respect for a person who's not Christian.
Well, sure, yeah, he is. I mean, the faith that he professes appears to be the faith that he lives. And I don't take issue with anybody along those lines. But on the other hand, if you're a Mike Huckabee and you've dug your kid out of trouble after the not because he was caught jaywalking, but after he was caught torturing a dog to death at Boy Scout camp, You're not in Clinton. I mean, you're not in Carter's ballpark. No, not even a little bit.
I heard a guy today on the Tom Hartman show wondering why we bring up issues like that. The reason why the left brings up issues like that is because we want to point out their hypocrisies. They act like they're the better than we are type of people, and then we find all these hypocrisies all the time.
Well, I'm sure the right would prefer for us to keep quiet about it so they could continue to try to snooker the American people. But somebody's got to talk about this stuff. Somebody's got to talk, Alan, about the threat that the religion industry poses to freedom in America, because they're in open warfare with the American Constitution.
You're right about that. They like theocracy.
I mean, they follow a translation and an understanding of a book that has nothing to do with freedom, that talks about us all being servants of or slaves of or yada, you know. There's not any democracy, and there's not any freedom in the New Testament, and very little, if any, in the Old. It's all kings and princes and people being subjugated and subject to. There's a reason you get the rise of the democratic impulse in 18th and late 17th century Europe when you do, because they had to have a break from the stranglehold of religious extremism that was represented by the church. It can't happen. Contrary to what Mitt Romney said, you can't have freedom inside religion. It's self-contradictory. I mean, if you had freedom inside religion and you were there at the first snake handling sanctuary Baptist church, and you know the preacher stood up and started prattling his BS, and you stood up in the back and said, "You're nuts," you would be thrown out of that church. You would not have the freedom to disagree with that freak. And it's the same in every sect, isn't it?
Or you can look at it the way that it says in the Gospel of St. Thomas, where it says, "The kingdom of heaven is upon the earth, and man do not see it."
Yeah.
You just do away with the church and all this submissiveness and just trust your own instincts.
I mean, can you imagine? Look, we've got the American Conference of Roman Catholic Bishops sending out emails telling people that they're going to hell if they vote for a pro-choice candidate. Clearly, there is no freedom in that church, because you are not free to advocate for anything that runs against doctrine. And it's not just the Catholics, and it's not just the Southern Baptists. It's religion in general. That's why there's dogma. That's why there's doctrine. You either go along or you get out. I got out.
Yeah, I did too.
Alan, it's always good to hear from you. Weather all right where you're driving?
Oh, yeah. I'm stopping today. I'm in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, okay.
This is where I was on the election, the last presidential election.
Oh, really?
Wasn't a very nice place to be.
No, indeed not. Well, stay safe. We think about you a lot.
Thank you.
You take care, Alan.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our good friend Alan, who calls from hither and yon around the country as he motivates his semi up and down the highways. So it's about 25 and a half minutes before the hour, 25 and a half minutes left in tonight's program. Yeah, you've got a little bit of time to get your thoughts in. I want to share this one with you. You know, it's another perfect little prayer meeting story. Can't hardly leave this one on. Yeah, don't leave anything on the field. Got to play them all. Now, you probably didn't know, or never bothered to think about, the fact that there is something called the American Decency Association. Yeah, I know. But there is, and they've got a president, and his name is Bill Johnson. Mr. Johnson of the American Decency Association. He's very encouraged right now, Mr. Johnson is. Because he says that Victoria's Secret, you know, anytime a story begins with a reference to the American Decency Association, a guy whose last name is Johnson, and Victoria's Secret. You know, you're just headed for trouble. You just are. No, they've been able to browbeat Victoria's Secret into adjusting and toning down their window displays to keep from offending the Christians. Yes, praise Jeebus. Ramen. In malls around the country, several Victoria's Secret outlets, several probably means two, have made accommodations for parents and decency advocates. Decency. It's so sweet. Somebody start some like tinny violin music, would you? Decency advocates. Yeah, they're decency advocates. They all carry daisies, and they're just decent. You know, they wouldn't say poopy if they had a mouthful. Victoria's Secret has apparently knuckled under because the decency advocates were shocked, I tell you, shocked, horrified, yea, verily, horrified by the mannequins in the store window. Mm-hmm. Indianapolis is one place where the arm twisting has had an impact, in which Victoria's Secret reclothed the mannequins and took them out of and took the teddies off of the mannequins and put flannel pajamas on them instead. No kidding. This was after a letter of concern and possible protest plans were sent to American Decency Association, and they began strong-arming Victoria's Secret over their dirty mannequins. Now, I know these right-wing religion industry freaks have kittens with crocheted tails every time, what is it, CBS broadcast the Victoria's Secret fashion show, you know, with the real live incredibly undernourished women walking down the runway in angel wings. The angel wings really, really good. That makes them crazy, too. They're not angels. They're little demons, demonesses with their demon boobies. Now, Johnson, I hear his nickname is Tiny. Tiny Johnson has had other successes in malls, getting Victoria's Secret to put mannequins in pajamas. And he complains, they're selling sex to us and we've got to take it because it's foisted right in front of our face. And this is happening all across the country. I don't quite know what he's talking about. Does America have a hot mannequin on mannequin love action problem in the Victoria's Secret display? These silly fools are getting all head up about plastic people, many of whom, and I think this may be some of the sexual appeal to the fundamentalists, are headless. You know, just little wigs on stumps. Or faceless. You know, and maybe that is why these religion industry freaks like Tiny Johnson are able, you know, maybe that's the problem. Maybe being fundamentalists, they are so used to seeing women as faceless, mindless, soulless automatons fit only to submit to their husbands that they mistake plastic dummies for people. You think? Tiny Johnson says that both families and their children are exposed to cleavage and sexual posturing and very skimpy clothing as part of the displays while trying to shop.
pardon me if I can't help pointing out that the cleavage is polyethylene. The sexual posturing is only sexual posturing if the minds of the decency advocates take it there. And the very skimpy clothing, what are they? It's not like there are flashing neon lights like a peep show around the Victoria's Secret, around the windows. You can walk on by. You don't have to stop and ogle. Now, son, I want you to look at the Jezebel mannequins in there. See how skimpy the clothing is? Look at their artificial cleavage, son. That is the devil. It is the devil! Tiny Johnson says it's important for decency advocates to thank Victoria's Secret for putting flannel pajamas on mannequins to keep from creating a sexual frenzy among right-wing fundamentalist religion industry practitioners. Thank them. I'm surprised that they settled for flannel pajamas. I'm surprised they weren't corduroy nightgowns or something with a high neck and a lace ruffle or something. Do these people ever consider how utterly moronic they seem? I mean, I'm guessing Tiny Johnson never takes his kid to a museum where he might see a naked Greek statue or a reproduction of him. God knows he wouldn't take his kids to see, say, a display of reproductions of perhaps Rodin. Or God knows the David. No. Because I don't know what happens to a fundamentalist. Maybe it's a good thing this happens. Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe the fundamentalist looking at the mannequin would just be all up a hump in the leg of the mannequin if he could just get at it, and that's their only I've walked by several. I've even walked in some. I once upon a time used to purchase those kinds of things for Agnes and, yeah, did. And never once in that process, although I did from time to time feel like a bull in a china shop, I mean, you just do, never once felt compelled to go over and, knock down one of the mannequins and get after it. Because I, as a rational human, have the innate and highly developed ability to distinguish humans from nondescript statues thereof. I have the ability to separate reality from fantasy. But apparently in the mind of a fundamentalist, fantasy is so strong because they live in a fantasy world anyway, where, people are, where humans are born of virgins and miracles are happening all the time, and the, dead zombie people are getting up and wandering around all over creation and flying off into the heaven. I guess because that's where they live, they have to be concerned about it. Changing the mannequin's apparel from teddies to pajamas. What do they do down at the sports store about the competitive one-piece women's swimsuits and leotards and so forth? I mean, isn't that kind of like what a teddy is, only a little bit more flimsy and, with some lace and embroidery and foolishness on it? What is it about women? And see, these guys, these citizens for decency, American Decency Association, Tiny Johnson, whatever. These people are completely in line with the folks who would have beaten the hide off of the girl from Qatif in Saudi Arabia. These people are no different than the people who would make women wear beekeeper suits. Because, you see, women are responsible for their evil, lust-laden thoughts, or what they perceive to be such. Because from the time they're tiny to, they're taught that women have a special relationship with the devil. Now, you're normal. You're rational. You're sane. And that must sound, I mean, I'm used to looking at these things, so I never, you know, it sort of slips past me just how loony, absolutely just loop, just woo, gone that sounds. But yeah, these fundamentalists look at women and they see an emissary of the very essence of evil. Not a model, not a real human being. It's not a trunk show where they're just standing really still. But a mannequin, a dummy, a giant puppet wearing the clothing that they sell. And they get all out of hand, and they're afraid that Jesus won't love them anymore because they looked at a dummy, a statue, wearing a particular piece of clothing. We're so screwed. Every night, you know, every day we bring you the programs here on the Horn, and bless you, you're willing to make it possible to do it month in and month out, and you have been. And as I've said before, I'm humbled and I'm honored. And we talk about these stories so that you'll be armed, if you will, with concrete examples of how irrational these people are and how utterly driven they are by the idea that they have a right to impose on the rest of society their narrow, hypocritical, tiny-minded view of the world. Now consider, we're talking about Indianapolis, Indiana. No, you know, no small place. You know, it ain't exactly as what David referred to as, you know, Elk Snort, West Virginia. I still giggle when I think about Elk Snort. Not far. I'm not sure. I don't know what the distance is between Elk Snort and Busted Knuckle. But Indianapolis, Indiana, and a bunch of freaks have had mannequins put into pajamas because of their own twisted sense of sensuality, libido, and sexuality. And that means that a guy who is madly in love with his wife or girlfriend, or a woman who's madly in love with her girlfriend, or any combination of the above, can't stand and look at a display window and say, "That would look really cute on her," and go in and see if they don't have it maybe in whoever the beloved's size is. No. No. They see pajamas. No teddies, no merry widows, no corsets, no bustiers, no bra and panty sets. Pajamas. Hoo-wee! Oh, I tell you, we're going to have a high old time this weekend, honey. I done brought you some flannel PJs. No, because they've made it seem dirty. The customer has to walk in, and they're kind of blushing and, you know, looking down at the floor, and I'd like to see do you have any do you have any nightgowns? We got some pajamas. You're not from the Americans for Decency, are you? No. Come back here in the back. I'll show you the good stuff. We're screwed. We're screwed. Because we let these geeks and jerks and repressed, hung up morons get away with this. Don't see any complaints for the Americans for Decency about the fact that you can go and pick up your antipsychotic medications at the Wally World and then go back and buy yourself a .30-06 with which to go and shoot up the school. No, no, that's not a decency problem. The decency problem is scantily clad mannequins. Do you know what a mannequin can... I mean, you know, you start off with one mannequin, next thing you're looking at two. Then you got a mannequin problem. They're giant Barbies. I mean, it's... But, you know, sleep tight tonight, Indianapolis. Your mannequins are in their jammies. What a country. What a country. Just to recap, on the one hand, people are terrified by the naked representation of the female form, while at the same time, somebody on their same side of the fight is urging the murder of Senator Hillary Clinton. You tell me where the decency problem is. Is it in the display window of Victoria's Secret in Indianapolis, Indiana, or is the decency problem inside the broadcast studios of Fox News? You tell me! Is the decency problem centered on a clothed statue that's not even hiding anything in the first place, because there's nothing to hide, because it's a statue and not anatomically correct? Or is America's problem in the toxicity, the indecency, the utter unmitigated hatefulness of a thing with an Adam's apple the size of an eight ball that wants to see Senator Clinton's dead body? Where's the problem? Where is the issue? Where is the threat to civil society? Where is the threat to decency in America? Oh, I'm sure if you ask Tiny Johnson about those remarks about seeing Hillary Clinton's dead body, well, you know, that's not really an issue that we're about. That's not our issue focus. We're focused on mannequins, not people who want to see dead bodies. That's citizens against necrophilia. We're citizens against indecency. But, sir, isn't this... No, we're hung up on... We're concerned with mannequins and nudity in mannequins and skimpy clothing. The skimpier the better. Sometimes they let me come back and look at it after they've taken it off the mannequin and put the pajamas on. Wait, I shouldn't talk about that. But that's our America. Really, is there a better picture of the dichotomy that is twisted America? All bent out of shape about a statue. but more than willing to give a pass to someone who talks about murder and dead bodies in the single-minded hope that one of her weak-minded audience will act on it. I don't know about you, but I vote for the latter. Thanks for dropping into the cathedral this evening. I certainly do appreciate it. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. And I hope you'll be back with us tomorrow evening. By the way, a reminder, Mark Levine's show tomorrow night when he takes on a right-wing religion industry Southern Baptist quote-unquote scholar, you know, one of these guys who knows exactly how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. Or on Mike Huckabee. Wait a minute, same thing. That'll be a dandy. Coming up in just a matter of minutes, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program, Strictly Confidential, with our fabulous LGBT conversation radio host, our IT consultant, Peter Godbold. After that, the horn section comes your way. And then it's all foxed up with that ranting, head-banging hippie, not to mention a darn fine audio engineer, John Fox. Thanks to both of those gentlemen. Many thanks to you. Thanks to the hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch. If you value what happens on the horn, you value all that he does at WhiteRoseSociety.org. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network.
In response to a deranged killer shooting rampage at Virginia Tech, Congress passed legislation today meant to keep guns out of the hands of the mentally ill. Both the House and Senate unanimously approved the bill, which toughens background checks for gun ownership. President Bush is expected to sign it into law. President Bush did sign new legislation today that requires more fuel-efficient vehicles and increased use of ethanol. The White House calls the new law a major step toward energy independence. On Capitol Hill, Congress passed legislation strengthening the Freedom of Information Act. Penalties have also been enhanced for agencies violating the Act's provisions. A House panel is challenging the White House over the CIA's secret destruction of interrogation videotapes. The House Intelligence Committee is preparing subpoenas to force CIA officials to tell what they know about when and why the tapes were destroyed and who gave the order. A hearing is set for Friday at which the White House will have a chance to convince a judge to keep courts out of their investigation. In Jacksonville, Florida, city fire officials say three people are dead in an explosion today that rocked a chemical plant, the plant manufacturer's Ecotain, a gasoline additive that reduces tailpipe emissions. Funerals are being held throughout Iraq today for the 20 people killed in three suicide bombings yesterday. In southern Pakistan, rescue workers continuing to investigate the wreckage of a passenger train that crashed last night. 56 people were killed. More than 150 were injured. Also in Pakistan, south of Lahore, a truck plowed into a rickshaw carrying children to school this morning. At least 11 children were killed in that accident. The UN adopted a non-binding measure calling for a global moratorium on the death penalty, a resolution opposed by the U.S., China, and Iran. The Vatican also supported the anti-death penalty vote. In spite of numerous warnings over the past 5 years, the U.S. is unprepared for a range of disasters, including biological attacks and a flu pandemic. That's according to a report from a watchdog group. The bird flu circulating in Europe, Asia, and Africa is said to be the most immediate threat. And Russian President Vladimir Putin has been named Time Magazine's Person of the Year. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll take a look at business news just after this.
Did you know 1 billion adults around the world cannot read? Two-thirds are women, many prohibited from learning. The rate of illiteracy is declining, but the number who can't read has been increasing. These are more than just numbers, they're people. They're your friends, neighbors, and even your family. Consider these numbers. In America, if you didn't speak English in your home, you're 44% more likely to be reading below the most basic level. If you didn't complete high school, the chances are good that you can't read. 85% of prisoners are illiterate, as are the kids who wind up in juvenile court. Here are the facts. If you can read, you can learn, get a better job, and make more money. If you can't read, you can't learn, you can't find a good job, you can't make a decent living. Choose smart. Learn to read. If you're out of school, find a literacy program through your local library.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
A U.S. businessman has purchased a rare copy of the Magna Carta for more than $21 million in order to place the 13th century document into the National Archives. The Magna Carta is widely considered the precursor to the Declaration of Independence and the first notable charter guaranteeing citizens' basic freedoms and property rights. The House passed bipartisan legislation to keep millions of middle Americans from being caught in the alternative minimum tax conundrum. The Senate has already approved the measure, and the White House also